Mr. Hutton, Reel 10. You were talking about after you got back, after your brief period as a POW, and you were sent back to B Echelon. Before the Knightsbridge battle.
Yeah.
What happened when you were there, before you went back to Cairo?
Well, there was just the sort of quartermaster and a few and the regimental clerk and a few odds and sods like that. And we knew the regiment was in trouble. We knew it was surrounded. But we could just hear rumours. We'd heard that tanks couldn't get through to them, that the tanks had gone to get the Free French out of trouble. It was a political job, and we were being sacrificed for the political because they didn't want the Free French to be. But that was just the rumours. We just couldn't find out what was happening to the regiment. And so we eventually went back to Cairo.
What date did you go? Did you go back after the actual annihilation of the unit, or...?
No, I would imagine the... I'm not sure what date we went, but I would imagine it was after the regiment had been wiped out. We'd heard rumours that it had been wiped out because of the Free French, you know, to sack...
How did you feel about you know, the end of the regiment?
We were... I don't think just then we were. It was afterwards we realised what we'd lost. It's just like losing a family, in a way. And we were just going to be a number. So we went to the RA base depot. I would imagine there were about 20 or 30 of us. And there was a lot of talk about reforming a regiment. And I was told I'd... was going to be a signaller. Well, I didn't fancy that.
Why not?
Well, it's not my cup of tea, I think. I don't think I could be bothered to learn the Morse code, I should think. I don't know, knowing me. And it was all new officers we didn't know, some of them straight out from England, hadn't got their knees brown. And I didn't fancy it at all. So... first of all, I thought try and get into long-range desert group. That suited me. That was sort of would suit me. Get away from all the bullshit. And George Firth, who was the regimental clerk and the lieutenant quartermaster, arranged for me to have an interview with the long-range desert group. And I was driven up there to somewhere near Amarea. I went for an interview. And anyway, I obviously didn't fare very well at the interview.
What was the interview like? What were they looking for?
Well, I hadn't a clue, really. But I thought, you know, I'd seen a lot of action. I thought I'd been a prisoner and escaped and got away. I thought that would prove myself a bit. Because I think, you know, for every 100 prisoners, you don't get more than 10 who really want to escape. Well, a lot of them think about it, but I think it's a smaller proportion than that. I think a lot of people who try to escape are a bit of a bloody nuisance, I think. The people who don't... Well, that anyway. I thought that there was a chance. But I really made a mess of the interview, I think. I didn't...
You don't remember how you messed it up?
That's the thought. I wasn't tough enough, I don't know. But I've seen some big, tough men who were just like little men if there was a lot of shit flying around, you know. But it was a sort of life that suited me, anyway. And anyway, there was no go, there wasn't. Why they turned me down, I don't know. And... So I came away from there, I was a bit disappointed. It's probably a damn good job I wouldn't. Probably shouldn't be here talking to you now. Because a bit later after that, they had a real bashing, didn't they? A long-range desert group. Anyway, I didn't get that job. I didn't know what it was. I was determined not to be a signaller. And I was walking. I was in Cairo somewhere. And near on the the very posh side of Cairo, on the by the Nile. And I think the reason I'd been there, I'd been to take some messages to the colonel's wife. She lived in that quarter, somewhere near Gezira or somewhere like that. And it was somewhere that, and I just happened to see this place, field security. And I thought, that's not a bad job. Because oh, way back in the days of Mirza Matru, one day a section of the field security visited the regiment. And they stayed a day and they fed. They stayed at our place and fed. And we got talking to them. And it sounded a damn good job.
What were they meant to, what did they say they did?
Well, it was a motorbike job, of course. And there wasn't a lot for them to do in the desert. All they were doing was sort of rounding up people who had, when the army ever advanced and things like that, tried to catch people who had handed airmen over to the Arabs, who had handed over airmen to the Germans, you know, that sort of thing. But in those days, it would be the Italians. Anyway, it didn't sound a bad job to me. Never thought any more about it till then. And I was passing this, so I just went in and asked about how he joined. And there was the sergeant there. He said, well, he said, you can have a go now. The major's upstairs. I'll go and see. And I just must have picked a time when they were, you know, building, redoubling their strength or whatever it is they do. So I went in and this major had me in and interviewed me there and then on the spot. I told him what had happened to me and I'd been a prisoner and got away and hadn't got a regiment left. And well, I didn't know much about the job, but it sounded all right to me. Then he had a questionnaire and he kept asking me questions on this questionnaire and writing it down. And the telephone went back, so he went out the room. I don't know why he went and left me in there. And I thought, well, if it's an intelligence job, the intelligent thing to do is to get up and have a look, see what is written on this form. And I decided the chap must be a bit of a snob because he just answered all my questions. But when he came where I went to school, I said Malvern, so he immediately put a red line under that. And so he asked me a few more questions, and I was in. Had to go away on a course to somewhere near where, I think it was at, where the New Zealand Field Security Headquarters had a place, somewhere where the New Zealanders' base camp was. What's this, is that Mardi? No, where's that? Anyway, I can't remember where it was, and I went on.
What did the South Knots Hussars think when you told them when you got back, you know, that day?
Well, there was only these 30 of us left. They tried to help me get into the LRDG, you see. And a lot of them went to different jobs. The regimental clerk, Sergeant Firth, he left them.
So what was this course all about?
Well, God knows, I'm in a minute. It was teaching us how to be field security policemen. And now if you ask me what we did on the course, we had to take an exam at the end of it. It all sounded very, very sort of glamorous, especially if you didn't go to the desert. A lot of people went to Syria and others went to Turkey and some went down into East Africa, you know, sort of Abyssinia type of thing. I was hoping, and some went to the Lebanon and all sorts of things, and a lot of the jobs were civilian clothes jobs, you see. And this all sounded very nice to me. And as I passed my exam and waiting for my posting, wondering where I was going to go, and I finished up with going back to the desert again. So I went to the 8th Army Headquarters section. What's that mean? I had visions of, you know, being in Beirut or somewhere like that, in civilian clothes. And so back I went to the desert.
And about what month would that be?
It would be just before the Battle of Alamein.
So
about a fortnight before the Battle of Alamein.
Round about October then?
Yeah. I was at Alamein, at the 8th Army headquarters at Alamein, you know, when the barrage started.
Now, how big, before we go on, how big a section were you...
There was 20 men in the section. There was a captain, a sergeant major, two sergeants, and the rest of us were either lance corporals or corporals. The ones who'd been it a bit longer were corporals. But most of the sections were all sergeants, but they were acting unpaid sergeants. Most of them had three stripes, easier to do, but not with this chap we had got in charge of us. Made it very difficult trying to do a job like that with one stripe, you know.
So there were 20 of you, and what was your role at 8th Army Headquarters? What did the section do?
Well, we had a... As soon as the army started to advance, and advanced very quickly, they went like hell, didn't they? We were put on what was called the Golden List.
Hang on, but what about before then, when you first got there and during the actual battle, what were you doing then?
Just hang about doing nothing. Our job was, we really hadn't got any job to do until a town was taken. And we wanted to be in there as quick as it was taken. We really hadn't got a lot to do except twiddle our thumbs, you see. In fact, we did very little work until we got to Sicily.
You were saying about the bombardment. What was that like when it opened up?
Oh, it was terrific. The ground shook, and I mean, we were a few miles back being at 8th Army headquarters, but it was a... It was really fantastic, the rumbling, and the ground shook, and, well, I'd never seen anything. I'd seen a lot of artillery fire, but I'd never seen anything like that before. And then we thought, and like everybody else, that it had been a piece of cake. You know, we didn't realise there was about, I don't know, 10,000-12,000 people killed, weren't they, getting through there? But we thought we'd walked through very nearly. It wasn't till later that we... And I expect if you read the press back in England, it was an absolute walkover. It was the... I think it was a lot of some of the Scottish infantry, but people like the Seaforth Highlands and things like that, they were decimated. You know, it was getting through the minefields and things like that. And I don't think the tanks behaved themselves very well. A lot of them didn't come forward as they should have done.
So, during this period, you were just basically...
We were just basically watchers, and had nothing to do except, well, wondering what was happening. We thought... We really thought it was an absolute piece of cake, but it wasn't. There was a hell of a lot of casualties, I think.
So then what happened?
Then things started moving. We still hung about, and all of a sudden we had orders to move, and we went as sort of quick as we could. And I think about November, somewhere around about November the 18th, we spent the night on a German, what had been a German airfield. I don't know whether it'd be Fuka or somewhere like that. And it was a wet and miserable sort of a night. And then the army kept advancing and we followed on. And apart from chasing off into the desert and finding going to some Bedouin type sheep tents, you know, and questioning a few Arabs, we're after, I think, pilots that had been shot down. And We were after some Arabs.
You were all on motorbikes, were you?
We had motorbikes and was one or two 1500 weights.
And what was your working method for the training? Did you just go off in a group or?
Well, at the moment we're all together. We hadn't been split up. And then we'd sometimes go off into the desert and see some of these Arabs, and I don't think we ever made much headway. But we were just, doing something, really, this captain, to justify our existence. I suppose he had to send reports in. And it was when we were getting nearer to... The first thing we had to do, really, was three of us were sent down to Bardia, because Bardia had been bypassed. The army had just gone like that, but because Bardia was a little bit off the road as a mountain sort of pass going down to the harbour and Bardia village. And we were sent in there to see what was happening. Well, we couldn't get drive right down. We were going to get halfway down the mountain pass, and the road had been blown.
Who were you with? Who were the three of you?
There was a chap who'd been who was really of Italian extraction. And he spoke Italian well.
Who was he?
I can't remember his name, but he was in England when war broke out, and he was interned for about 6 months. Because he was of Italian extraction. In the end, they decided he was safe and they let him out and put him in the intelligence corps.
And who was the other one?
And the other one was that one was a lance corporal, but he spoke Italian very well. And the other chap was a bombardier, a corporal. I can't remember his name. I think his name was Thompson, I think.
So the road was blocked, you say?
The road was blocked. And so we left, we had our lunch. We'd got a great big parmesan cheese in the back of the 1500 weight, and we'd got one of those carboys, like you have acid in, a big thing, full of wine.
Where'd you got that from?
We picked it up somewhere. And... we went down, had this damn good lunch, and we walked down into Bardia, left the truck up on the road. And it seemed empty, and all of a sudden a woman came out, sort of dressed up in a very cheap, artificial leopard skin coat. Like, you know, it's sort of got spots on it, like a leopard or something. And... she was a prostitute. She'd been left behind by the Germans, I expect. She left her behind because I think she got the pox. And we looked round the place. It was empty. And we went into a house. For some unknown reason, we went in the back door. And then on the front door, there was a great big anti-tank mine hanging on the back of the door.
A booby trap.
So it's a good job we didn't go in the front, isn't it? Because it was silly of us. We weren't looking for booby traps. It taught us a lesson. We were very careful after that. So we decided to go home. There was no point in being there. And parked up by where we'd left our truck was a staff car. And we met three reporters, really quite they were quite famous ones, and we all, you know, we knew them. I can't remember them now. I mean, I've seen them on telly years, you know, talking about the war, but I just can't remember the names. And we told them, we warned them about the booby traps, and we told them about the prostitute, and they went in, and a month or two later we read in the press how these chaps wrote a story about themselves, how they were the first into Bardia. Well, they were the second into Bardia as far as we were concerned, but there was nothing very, very wonderful about it. It was, anybody could have been there. But as I say, you have to take what reporters say with a pinch of salt, don't you, really? I suppose they've got to make it worth reading.
What happened then? You after Bard? Yeah.
Then we carried on. And you come to a very nice spot in the desert between, I think it's between Derna and Benghazi. And it's a very fertile spot. And so I think it's only about 10 miles wide and about 60 miles long. I ought to have looked it up on the atlas before you came. But it was a lovely spot where it was delightful after the desert. And we had to... Three of us stayed behind there at this place called Beda Latoria. And that is where... I don't know if they've ever heard the story of how Rommel was attacked by the commandos. And they tried to get Rommel, and they very nearly did, but he happened to be out. They killed a lot of people at the Rommel's headquarters. And but Rommel wasn't there. And it was somebody Keyes's son. He'd been in the Battle of Jutland. Sir Roger...
Roger Keyes, yeah.
And, and there was a New Zealander, a New Zealand commando. I think the New Zealand commando got away. I think Keyes was killed.
His son, yeah.
His son, Keyes, was killed. And we lived in this Rommel's old house, the three of us. It wasn't about, it was a nice little spot with a big garden, and there was a diesel generator for electricity. The diesel generator, it was very useful. It's got electric power, and we've even got the Arab working, he worked for us. We kept it in cigarettes and bully and things, who actually worked the diesel generator.
But why had they left you there? What were you meant to be doing?
Oh, I'll come round to that. But first of all, I'll tell you about these good digs. And our job was, the whole place had been deserted. But they'd left the Bishop of Derna, who was a big man politically, I believe, and his chaplain or something. And they stayed behind. And 8th Army headquarters were a bit puzzled why he stayed behind. Everybody else had gone. There was no reason for him to be there. So... And because I think he was very important, you know, was, in Italy and that sort of thing, and because he was a Roman Catholic, I suppose nobody wanted to knock him about. So we were just, our job was just to stay and watch him and keep an eye on him, just the three of us. I think he was a wrong one. There was no reason why I should have stayed. I think they even wondered whether he'd got a transmitter. We certainly got pigeon, but we soon put a stop to that. He'd got got this sort of pigeon loft and pigeon pens, and we ate those. And we were with him sort of permanently.
And did he ever do anything that you regarded as suspicious, other than being there?
Well, this Italian that was with us, he used to... I mean, I'd got no respect for the man. I mean, he was, as far as I was concerned, he was the enemy. But this this other Lance Corporal, who was the Italian extraction, used to get down on his knees and kiss his ring, got a ring on his hand, bend down and kiss his hand, or the back of his hand. And that annoyed me and the other chap. I think his name was Thompson, Corporal Thompson. And we had to stay with him. In fact, I tell you wrong when I say there was nobody else there. There was an Italian there, Italian sailor, whose wife and kids were there. But his wife had been too ill to move, so he stayed behind. And he'd been a chef for an Italian admiral. So that's all there was there. and this chap, we called him, his name was Salvatore. And we employed him, as it, we provided him with rations and things, because his wife and kids were, his wife had been very ill. And so he cooked for us. And we had some damn good meals. And he'd got a, got a sow with sucking pigs. And he kept killing and cooking these sucking pigs for us. And we provided him with cigarettes and all sorts. We fed very well there.
Did he cook the pigeons?
Yes, he cooked the pigeons and and we used to feed this Bishop of Derna and his chaplain. We always used to sit down and have a meal together.
You didn't get on with him. Did you speak to the bishop?
Oh, yes, he didn't speak English and I didn't speak. I was trying to learn Italian, could make myself understood. And but we didn't trust him. But this corporal did. I think this corporal thought he was marvellous. This Lance Corporal, Italian. I can't remember what his name was. He got an Italian name. Name like Grimaldi or so. No, that was the name of an interpreter I had later. And it was a very good, very good billet, this was. We were there for about 8 weeks. And then this bishop went somewhere else. Whether he was sent down to Carr or Alex, I don't know. But we had him for a week or two. Our next job was, there was a lot of wine round there on all the farms that had been deserted. Little farm made their own wine. And they had the sort of wine cellars above ground. They were a bit like a big potato pie, shaped like this, with earth on the top. And I used to crawl into these things, and I had a bit of a rubber tube. And I could suck it out of these big demijars and drink the stuff. And if I liked it, we had it. If I didn't like it, we didn't. And we sent some up to our headquarters for the rest of the section. And that was up at 8th Army headquarters. And before we knew where we were, we seemed to be finding wine for 8th Army headquarters. Keep going round the place and getting a 1,500 weight truck full of demijars of wine. Used to keep the best for myself. And taking it up there. And then we sort of get. So you say, what did I do in the war, Daddy? I found wine for 8th Army headquarters. And this Roger Keyser's brother came to see us because he'd heard about where his. Because I think Keyser's son was buried in the garden of this place with a few Germans. They killed some Germans as well, and they were all buried in the garden, I believe. And he came to see us, and I actually wasn't there when he came, but he spoke to the other two, this corporal and something else. He'd been to see them. And then for some reason, we moved out of that billet into the bank. So I can't remember what the reasons for it, because it was a damn good billet. And we moved into this, the bank was right on the main road, and there was traffic going up and down all the time. And one of the jobs we had to do, we had to go, there's a place called Apollonia. An ancient Roman town, ruins and things. And we used to go into the souk somewhere near there, an Arab market, and had to go and listen to all the rumours. And
now, who was doing the translating?
Well, this corporal was, we could make Arabs understand him.
The Italian one?
No. Full corporal, Thompson. He could get on quite well with Arabic. He could find out what Arabs wanted to tell him, but he wasn't clever enough to find out something they didn't want to tell, you know what I mean? But just go and talk to them and give them tea and things like that. You could get quite a lot of, you could hear a lot of rumours which were mostly, weren't worth a light, really, but it was one of the things that
What sort of rumour would there be? You know?
Well, this is one that got us into real trouble, but we didn't.